Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Testing 1-2-3-3-2-1, 1-2-3-3-2-1, 3-2-1, 1-2-3. Welcome to the voice of the American Readout. This is Radio Free Readout. I'm John Jacob Schmidt, your host. This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show, and it is an honor to be your host once again today for episode 16-30. That is the 30th episode of 2016. Our email, johnjacob at radiofreereadout.com, and that's our Facebook also, facebook.com/radiofreereadout, where we have regular updates, things that are developing. That's where we post it. I hope you all had a blessed week, and I hope you are all doing something to invest in yourselves, in your family, and your community to help prepare you for the challenges ahead for Christian patriots in America. We are going to cover several things. Actually, let's just start off right now with the news and commentary. Brought to you by author Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series, all 10 books out, including the audiobooks. Go to 299days.com to learn more. In international news, first of all, probably one of the most significant developments this week in international news, and many of you, I would guess, haven't even heard of it, or just a blip of it, because no one's talking about it. They're burying this. And that is 7,000 Turkish police, estimated 6 to 7,000 Turkish police and military forces have surrounded Incirlik NATO airbase. There is like a media blackout about this, except for alternative news sites. The first one that we heard from was Russia Today, RT News. And then it started making its way across other news, but I'm not finding it. I'm not finding it on the mainstream media, except for occasionally just in passing. I'm going to talk about this and dedicate a segment to this tonight. So we're going to come back around to this, but I will be kind of revisiting this throughout. It is estimated now that there is approximately one ISIS attack every 84 hours in Europe, between machete and hatchet and knife attacks, gun attacks, trucks mowing people down. You add them all up, one ISIS-inspired attack every 84 hours. And that has led, like someone wrote, looks like Angela Merkel is giving Barack a run for his money on that Gun Salesman of the Year award. Requests in Germany for self-defense weapons permits are hitting record highs in 2016. Police data reveals the firearms ownership experts and firearms experts say people wanting to purchase non-lethal weapons, because that's about all you can get without jumping through an incredible amount of hoops. The people wanting to purchase non-lethal weapons come from all sectors of society, be it workers or professors. The new police data shows that Germans are feeling increasingly unsafe in the wake of recent lone wolf attacks and shootings, which has sparked a demand for non-lethal self-defense weapons. As of June 2016, there were 402,000 small arm carry permits in the National Weapons Register. That's small arms. This figure is almost 50% higher than last year, when there were fewer than 270,000 requests for permits. Now, the small arms carry permits, or Kleiner Waffenschein in German, are restricted to non-lethal self-defense weapons, such as blank firing and gas pistols and flare guns. You got to get a permit to buy a flare gun. But in a country with one of the strictest weapons laws in Europe, such permits are much easier to obtain as they do not require background checks, safety classes, psychiatric evaluation, and proficiency tests, which are mandatory for obtaining a firearms license. And good luck with that. So it's sad when you see almost a doubling of people seeking permits for non-lethal weapons such as blank firing pistols, flare guns, whatever they can get their hands on. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, this international trade deal, the largest regional trade accord in history, would set new terms for trade and business investments among the United States and 11 other Pacific Rim nations, a far-flung group with an annual gross domestic product of nearly $28 trillion, which represents about 40% of the global gross domestic product and one-third of world trade. This is nothing short of while selling our country out. Nationalism. This is purely being sacrificed at the altar of globalism. And Chris Ann Hall, you heard if you listened earlier this evening before Radio Free Readout and right before Wall Builders, the show, showing that this TPP, as it's called, is totally unconstitutional. So many of you, it's not posted yet, so you heard it first on Radio Free Readout, most likely, unless you listen to it on the Liberty First app. Good eye-opener to listen to. Christians are paying the price as Turkey turns to Islam, and that is happening at a very accelerated pace. You guys know we did an interview last year with an Amron operator who actually worked with the underground church in Turkey. Well, things are going to get a lot more complex for Christians over there. The evening of the coup, a couple weeks ago, the imams were calling for these patriots to come flooding into the streets and stand up against the military. Muslims standing up against the military, which was trying to, defend the Constitution and displace the president who's acting more and more unconstitutionally. There's a big move for Islam taking over Turkey. Some of these people bravely stood in front of tanks as they defended the democratically elected president, not acting constitutionally, but democratically elected. Around 240 from both sides died and 1,400 were injured. Well, for others, the night presented different opportunities as hardline Muslim Sunnis whipped up to a frenzy, targeted Turkey's Christian community. In Mataliya, a sprawling city in Anatolia, once the heartland of Christianity in the East, they targeted a Protestant church. The word church is a grand term for the small modern shopfront nestled in the city's minority Alevi district. Despite a tolerant constitution, Protestants are not allowed to build churches in Turkey. Even the name church must be coupled to the non-threatening association. So you can call it the East Side Association, but not the East Side Church. Gangs chanting Allahu Akbar rounded on it, the church, the association building, to smash its glass frontage. The attack on the church was light, but it's significant that it was only the shop front attack in those 3 days. He said they were the only targets, but the Black Sea of Trebizond, others attacked the Santa Maria Church, smashing windows and using hammers to break down its door. The events of that Saturday night were not new for either of those cities. In 2007, three Christian employees of a publishing house for Bibles in Metalia were attacked. After being tortured, their hands and feet were tied and their throats cut by five Muslim assailants. Turkey used to boast 2 million Christians. Now it barely has 120,000. Of course, most of them have gone underground. They have fewer, actually, than in Iran. But what shocked people most about this July 15th attacks was how much hatred still remains after almost 10 years. It's only going to get worse. Though it is nominally a secular republic, there can be little doubt that the government and Turkey's 117,000 Sunni imams work together. Not too good. That'll be something else that Rescue Christians and Voices of the Martyrs are going to be getting. There'll be a new front opening up. In regional news, you guys heard about this rancher, Jack Yantis, last November. One of his free-ranging cattle, a bull, in fact, was hit by a car down on the highway. The police show up. And I mentioned this yesterday on the show, but something happened at the radio station, at the studio. The show went out nice and clean and clear, sounded great. But the recording is all scratchy and very difficult to listen to. So I'm just going to mention this again here tonight. Rancher Jack Yantis was shot to death by deputies who apparently the dispatch called the rancher, said, hey, we've got medical crews trying to extract some people out of this car who just hit your bull. The bull's still alive. He's very agitated. The rescue workers feel threatened by him. The deputies are down there and they're asking you to show up to deal with this. So he shows up armed with his rifle. The deputies had already just filled the bull full of holes, but it's not dead. So the rancher goes to aim at the bull to drop it with his rifle, and there was some verbal something going on between him and the deputies. They yell at him. The reports start differing that that one deputy grabbed him and pulled him off balance. When he spun around, the deputies jumped back and opened up on him and killed the rancher. Others are saying that he pointed the rifle at the deputies as in a threatening manner. So there's all kinds of stuff that's just not adding up here. So the prosecuting attorney at the federal level and at the state level both announced the same day they're not going to be pressing any charges against the deputies. They asked the rancher to show up. Their story is that he was pointing the rifle toward the bull, which was directly in line with also the rescue workers and the accident scene. Other witnesses are saying, no, actually, that's not true at all. He was pointed toward the bull with the ditch in the background, not the accident scene. So what happened was the deputy or the prosecuting attorney said they won't pursue a criminal case against the two Idaho sheriff's deputies who shot and killed an armed rancher. And this is the part that got me very concerned. And this was something that showed up in the spokesman review that got buried in all the other press releases. This is the only place I found it. Now, I haven't looked every place I'm sure that it's been posted, but I can't. It's the wording. This wording has been removed since I first grabbed this right off the spokesman review. U.S. Attorney Wendy Olson said Friday that the November 1st death of Jack Yantis was a tragedy, but the evidence doesn't show the deputies intended to break the law. She says her office notified Yantis's family of the decision. Now, does this sound familiar? Remember the Clinton, the depositions with the FBI? And the FBI's recommendation not to press charges against Hillary Clinton. Why? Because it's very clear what she did was illegal. but she didn't intend to break the law when she did it. Now you have deputies who gunned down a rancher, and some of the witness testimony says, as he was getting ready to pull the trigger on the bull to do what the deputies couldn't apparently do, one of them reached out and grabbed him and pulled him back or sideways and turned him around, and then they jumped back and opened fire on the rancher, killing him because they felt threatened because his gun spun around when he spun around. Could be a case of manslaughter, but this is a classic case where we would use a grand jury. This is something that absolutely a grand jury should have been called to look at all of the evidence, because basically, if these guys acted unlawfully, they walk. So you're allowing the prosecutors to determine whether or not there's enough evidence to prosecute these guys. And they say they're not going to prosecute them. They're not going to bring charges against them. Why? Because there's not enough evidence to show that the deputies intended to break the law. Now, that tells me they broke the law, but they didn't mean to. So at least there's not enough evidence to show that they meant to, but they still broke the law. And what bothers me is that they have a double standard for justice, that they're not using the same measure and the standard. How many of us would get charges, who would never have charges brought against us because the attorney doesn't have enough evidence to show that we meant to break the law? How many people are in prison? How many citizens are in prison who didn't intend to break the law? Anyway, the grand jury would have taken this out of the prosecutor's hands. It would have been completely appropriate. It's a system that we have in place in our country. It doesn't mean the deputies are guilty. All it means is we believe there's enough evidence here to show that there could be criminal intent here. So we agree, the grand jury agrees, that charges should be brought so that all parties can present their evidence in a court of law and let justice fall where it may. But no, they won't even let it get that far. This bothers me. What bothers me is the trend that we're seeing, that it's apparent that agents or employees working for government entities are not facing criminal charges and having those cases brought to court because there's not enough evidence to show that they intended to break the law, when the rest of the citizenry are going down and doing hard time, regardless of whether or not you intended to break the law or not. That's a problem. We'll be back in a minute. This is Voice of the American Redoubt.
While the world prepares to watch the Olympics, which happens to be the biggest display of bread and circuses, the Fed is preparing to make a move on your money and claims they have the legal authority to do so. Hello everyone, this is Fox 519 here, and I'm bringing you the news and commentary that matters to your pocketbook as patriots and preppers. This is Eye on the Economy, brought to you by Radio Free Redoubt. Hello everyone, Fox 519 here. For months now, I've been telling you that the coffee from Sisters Coffee Roasters is the best. Folks, I'm going to challenge you in the next month. It's time to put your money where your mouth is. Literally. Fellow preppers, I'm telling you, I drink Sisters Coffee. It's the best. And I want to make sure you are properly caffeinated to meet the demands of what we're about to face in this nation. Go out today and buy yourself some of their freshly roasted beans or their green beans that come pre-vacuum sealed. Get out and get yourself some today. Remember, Sisters Coffee Roasters. What all the cool patriots are drinking. All right, well, welcome back. So tonight we're going to talk about negative interest rates and how the Fed is prepared to push the go button on them here in America. Now, with the decline in consumer confidence and the very serious decline in the amount of durable goods being shipped here in America, it's no wonder that the Fed is getting ready to implement the interest rates to offset the ever-growing debt. Now, in congressional testimony last February, a member of Congress asked Janet Yellen if the Fed had the legal authority to use negative interest rates. Here's what she had to say in response. In the spirit of prudent planning, we always try to look at options that we would be available to us, either if we needed to tighten the policy more rapidly than we expected, or the opposite. We would take a look at negative interest rates. The legal issues, I'm not prepared that you have all thoroughly examined this point, and I am not aware of anything that would prevent the Fed from taking interest rates into the negative territory. But I am saying that we have not fully investigated the legal issues. End quote. So, as of then, Yellen had no firm answer either way. Now, a few weeks later, she sent a letter to Representative Brad Sherman out of California, and he had asked what the Fed intended to do in the next recession and whether or not it had the authority to implement negative interest rates. Now, she did not directly answer the legal authority question, but Sherman took the response to mean that the Fed had thought about having the authority. Yellen noted that the letter, that the negative interest rates elsewhere seemed to be having an effect. Now, I have talked about that in the past, how it is affecting Europeans and not affecting them for the greatest moving forward. Now, fast forward a few weeks into the June 21st congressional appearance. Things are changing. She stated that the Fed does have the legal authority to use negative interest rates, but denied any intent to do so. She quote said, "We don't think we are going to have to provide accommodation, and if we do negative interest rates, it is not something we see on our list." That seems like a pretty aggressive timeline there. It goes along with some of the economic indicators we are seeing and drop in goods and transport, and as well as the oil prices. What we know is that February, Yellen said that they had not fully investigated the negative interest rates. Then May, Yellen is unwilling to state that the Fed has the legal authority to go negative. And then in June, Yellen had no doubt that the Fed could legally go into the negative territory with rates. But by whose legal authority is she operating? Who has granted this to her? And I've researched this backwards and forwards, and I'm not seeing any court ruling that allows a private institution to take depositors' money at will. But will they do it? Yes. And they will do it without your authority or the voice of the people, thus proving that the Fed is always outside the laws of our great nation. Clearly, the Fed is getting ready for something. They saw the effect of Brexit, and they saw how quickly the ECB had print monies to offset their losses. As I have said before, Europe is usually 6 months in front of us. Bottom line is, by putting the legal authority question to rest, the Fed is laying the groundwork for taking the rates below zero. Folks, I know things can seem right now. The economy seems stable. Yes, some stability is good. But the experiment cannot continue. It will, in time, fail again, just as it has for thousands of years. I encourage all of you to stay vigilant these days. Don't be distracted by Rio. The Olympics are fun, but don't be distracted. Keep a close watch on the rest of the world while the eyes and the backs all turn away from what's going on. Thanks again for listening. And for Eye in the Economy and Radio Free Readout, this is 519 signing off. God bless.
Radio Free Readout.
This is segment two, brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate, Patriot-owned business to help you get strategically relocated to the northern part of the panhandle of North Idaho, selkirkmountainrealestate.com. Give them a call today. A couple of announcements here. I wanted to give you the rundown for this month for the Underground Project. The numbers are in, unless any orders come in late tonight. Well, we know we've already broken we've surpassed our goal. For the month of July, we are taking all of the proceeds from the thumb drive that we sell at the American Readout Gear Store called the Underground Project. How would you go underground and use covert communications techniques and safe houses? How would you be able to recognize informants and avoid informants, agents, and agents provocateur? And this is a hypothetical future situation to help prepare Americans for that eventuality. But right now there are Christians overseas that are being hunted, pursued. They are driven underground, and they have to operate in secret. There are two organizations that work with the underground church overseas, rescuechristians.org. They rescue people in slavery type of situations, those who are entrapped in places around the world. They focus heavily on Pakistan. They've done a lot of great work smuggling Christians out of situations where they were held in bondage, slavery, or had trumped up charges, false charges brought against them that could result in their death. Blasphemy, because they're Christians. Blasphemy against the prophet in these Muslim countries. They have purchased prostitutes, women, Christian women who have been taken, either arrested or abducted and forced into prostitution. They will sometimes re-abduct and get these people out of the country, smuggle them out, or they will just buy them. I'll buy that woman off you. Yeah, you don't want her anymore. I'll take her. And then they whisk her out because she's just going to get snatched up again later and thrown right back in the same situation. These guys are doing amazing work, dangerous work. The other one is the Voices of the Martyrs covert operations. And they're doing amazing work smuggling Bibles and audio Bibles for many who are illiterate and cannot read, and also shortwave radios where Christians in the underground can tune in to messages of hope, encouragement, and Bible teachings that are broadcasted over the borders to these Christian communities. Amazing work, worthy of our support, in my opinion. We've taken all of the proceeds for the month of July, and we have $802.75. And we are going to divide that equally between these two ministries, rescuechristians.org and Voice of Martyrs Covert Operations, and divide that $401 to each of those ministries. So thank you guys so much for helping to support that. That is something that's just very near and dear to my heart. And although I understand that we're seeing increasing persecution against Christians around the world, and even a hostility toward Christians and a hostile attitude, even in America. And we're starting to see that persecution come against Christians in many cases in the United States. We're not quite where we need to be underground at this point and operate covertly, but that's coming. We need to prepare for that. And we want to support those who are living that reality on a daily basis around the world right now. So that's what we're going to do. Now, I want to talk quickly about this situation in Turkey. ZeroHedge.com has a pretty in-depth coverage of this. They've pulled from multiple different sources. But I have my own thoughts on this, and somebody summarized it really well. And this guy is... where's he from? This is a guy who goes by the name, well, his name is Bill Still, S-T-I-L-L. And so he has the Still Report, or Still, reporting from Washington, D.C. This is report number 1087, covering the 7,000 Turkish forces surrounding the Incirlik Air Base. I want to go through this because he does a pretty good assessment, kind of pulling in all the facts, and then he throws in some of his personal assessment. I don't agree with him entirely on every one of his points, but for the most part, he's on it. He's got it covered. So I want to go through this and let you listen to this assessment from Bill Still, YouTube channel. And this is the Still Report 1087.
7,000 Turkish military and police forces last night surrounded the Incirlik Air Base in southern Turkey in what Turkish officials called a security check. What does that mean? The Turks claimed that they feared that another coup against Turkish President Erdogan was being staged among the Turkish military personnel still remaining at the big airbase. The top U.S. general will be visiting the base today, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Dunford. General Dunford is no doubt sizing up the security situation of the base, which is the top repository of U.S. nuclear weapons outside the United States. Many arms experts have called for the U.S. to evacuate those nukes back stateside immediately. The most dangerous scenario the U.S. military faces is if Turkish forces were to overrun the big air base and take control of the 90 B-61 tactical nuclear weapons that are stored in secure underground bunkers. Erdogan could then invite top scientists from across the Islamic world to come and try to either make the bombs functional or at least remove the radioactive material from them to be used to threaten the West with a more conventional explosive device that would scatter the highly radioactive material in a major European or even an American city. This is called a dirty bomb. And once out of U.S. hands, the Turks could even be bluffing that the material had been removed, but Western leaders would probably not be able to take a chance on the bluff, and so they would have to cave into whatever the Turks demanded. Far-fetched? Not at all. Turkey has the second largest army in NATO. The U.S. air base houses only a few thousand U.S. and NATO military personnel who would be no match for the Turkish army. They would have to surrender immediately. Would President Obama then be willing to go to war to retrieve the prized nukes? Very unlikely. Even if he did, the Russians would probably back up the Turks.
Okay, this is what I was saying. When you got a dictator, basically he's acting as a dictator, who just survived a coup, he is in ultra-paranoid mode right now. And they already are hinting that, not even hinting, they're coming right out and saying they believe the United States had something to do with it. Now, this is a NATO base. Primarily, U.S. military are on this base, so our air base. This is also where we have nuclear rockets stored, missiles stored there. And so this is a very big deal, and this is a very bold move by Erdogan. But anyway, let's go ahead and listen to this. I strongly suspect they're going to make some type of accusations against the United States. They are seeking concessions. They are seeking concessions, and they are setting the stage to create a hostile environment with the United States. They need this conflict so they can make a clean break from the relationship with the United States for where they are going in the future. This is very significant. This is going to tie into a biblical prophecy. It's going to tie into world geopolitics. This will affect, I believe, this will affect, it will affect you and me as patriots in America. You're not insulated from this. This is very interesting to watch closely. So let's listen to the next part of what Bill has to say.
So Obama would face the prospect of a nuclear war in order to retrieve captured nuclear weapons. Hopefully those nukes have already been spirited away as part of a covert military operation, which even Obama may not be aware of. Back up the Turks.
Okay, time out. No, I strongly disagree with this. The Russians are not going to back up the Turks. The Russians are backing the Syrian government, which is in direct conflict with the Turkish government. In fact, the Syrian government, which Russia is backing, is fighting ISIS, which is an ally to Erdogan because they're piping oil into his country, into Turkey, and fighters are entering northern Iraq to join ISIS through Turkey. So Russia would definitely not jump on the bandwagon here to support Erdogan to, turn against us. I strongly disagree with that. But I don't even think those nukes are in there. I believe as soon as that coup went down, if not before, those nukes were on their way out.
working over the past few months, they could have been replaced with exact duplicates, but without the radioactive elements within. Under the circumstances, there is no good reason to have nukes stationed in Turkey. It's just too dangerous.
Yeah, bingo. I agree. I would be blown away if those nukes are still there. Those were probably on their way out the door weeks ago.
Erdogan has not just gone over to the Islamic side, as the MSM depicts. Last December, Erdogan traveled to Saudi Arabia and declared himself the leader of the entire Islamic world. In fact, he is now using this coup to finish killing off the remnants of the Turkish secular democracy that made the nation great.
Yeah, amen to that, especially with how Erdogan has become so cozy with ISIS and this hard turn toward Islam and away from the Constitution. This is very unsettling. It's extremely destabilizing what's happened over there. And the last thing we want is for ISIS to get their hands on some of those nukes.
Erdogan has announced that he will impose a new Turkish constitution and bypass democratic laws to achieve it. In addition, he has called for a new Islamic caliphate with Turkey as its center. I'm still reporting from Washington. Good day.
That is a fact. This was the golden opportunity he's been waiting for, probably fomented at the very least, knew was in the works and allowed it to take place, because this was the opportunity that gave him the ability to start cleaning house. Not even people that were involved in the coup. Anyone who is a dissident at all. Anyone that could be potentially a threat. We've seen this the world over. Now listen to this.
Erdogan has announced that he will impose a new Turkish constitution and bypass democratic laws to achieve it. In addition, he has called for a new Islamic caliphate with Turkey as its center. I'm still reporting from Washington. Good day.
Okay, Christian patriots, you see how things are lining up, right? This is a very, very significant development in the Middle East. This is a NATO country where we have one of the largest deposits, if not the largest deposit, of strategic and tactical nuclear weapons in that country, and a coup attempt that failed. And now we have a dictator that is grabbing the power, and he is aligned with the extreme end of the Islamic spectrum. He is right on track, right on mission. Hang on to your seats. Hi everyone, this is John Jacob Schmidt, here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real-life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
Hi, I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, North Idaho. Every day, I sell homes and land to bankers, doctors, economists, scientists, military folks, and more for good reason. They all know what's coming and want to secure safety and peace for their family. They've done the research and discovered that North Idaho's superior environment, food insecurity, surrounded by more like-minded patriots than anywhere in America. At www.revrealty.us, you can read stories about North Idaho's weather, spring development, growing food, solar, and alternative energy. Additionally, every article has a beautiful quote from the brilliant mind of Thomas Jefferson. We also give you free access to our listings, so feel free to browse our inventory or fill out our short form, and we'll do the searching for you. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us online at revrealty.us. That's www.revrealty.us. And God bless you.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Something happened in here.
Welcome back. This is segment three at Radio Free Redoubt. Segment three is brought to you by Kati Armor, C-A-T-I Armor. They have the soft armor and the hard plates, level 3A, front, back, side plates, and everything is made right here in the American Redoubt with free shipping on all your orders. Turn around in about 1 week. Go to katiearmor.com, Christian Patriot-owned business. Support them today. Now, last week, I listed some resources. The ChrisAnnHall.com. I'm talking about learning your history and learning your heritage. This is critically, critically important for us in America as patriots to be fighting for liberty, to be fighting for Americanism, to know who we are, to know where we came from, to know our history, know our heritage, and to be able to stand on that. Otherwise, we're defined by whichever way the wind's blowing and whichever way the globalists say who we are as an American. That's not American. That's not American. Traditional family, husband and wife and children, that's not America. That's not who we are. Well, we need to know exactly who we are. Those are the resources that I gave you last week. ChrisAnnHall.com, constitutional attorney, and great. Takes you right back to history. Wall Builders, another one for our Christian conservative heritage. The Constitution, the founding documents, both of these, Chris Ann Hall and Wall Builders, go take you right back into our founding documents where we came from. The 10th Amendment Center.com, great one, great resource, strongly support and endorse them. And Centers for Self-Governance.com. Center for Self-Governance.com. That's applied civics training based on America's founding principles. This is how you get equipped to get engaged. This is the thing right here. Once you learn your heritage, you learn history, you know our founding documents and all of the other documents in history that led up to the point, all of the influencing factors that made the minds and hearts of our founding fathers tick. That's all encompassed in these resources. But Center for Self-Governance is an actual plan to activate you as a patriot to get you engaged in a very effective way. Now, I just took my first course. I've heard nothing but amazing testimonies. Matter of fact, this is the kind of stuff that scares the adversary, is for you to be effective, emboldened, equipped, and with the knowledge of our history and our heritage and our founding documents and how our system works and the in and outs of the Constitution. You will know more about our Constitution and the founding documents and the supporting documents than the people you're going up against. This is a pretty cool meme that I saw on a city council woman's Facebook page. She's also involved in this. Well, she's been to several of these courses. Center for Self-Governance, also endorsed by Representative Matt Shea, Representative Heather Scott, just champions in the patriot community. And this says, in short, we desire to substitute all the virtues and miracles of a republic for all the vices and absurdities of a monarchy. That was written by Frederick Bastiat. He is the author of a very small book that should be on all of your bookshelves. It's titled simply The Law. The Law. It's what law is, the purpose of law, and the purpose of government implementing law. It is a beautiful document. I have a signed autographed copy that was given to me by Representative Helen Chenoweth many years ago, about 12 years ago, 15 years ago. I can't remember when she gave it to me, but I read that so quick. That is one you can read quickly and reread. And that is written by Frederick Bastiat, and it's called The Law. And this is a quote from him. In short, we desire to substitute all the virtues and miracles of a republic for all the vices and absurdities of a monarchy, which is exactly where we are right now. Now, I'm excited about this because I'm taking this course from Center for Self-Governance in St. Mary's, Idaho. This coming week, I'll be taking level one, which is Wednesday and Thursday night. It's Foundation in Self-Governance, level one course through the Center for Self-Governance. In level one, the student discovers the U.S. designer's concepts of power, government, and control, which belongs in the people, which is the part that scares the left. The student will learn different systems of government based on those concepts, based in those concepts. They will gain a foundational understanding of the difference between power and control relating to various systems of government. The control concepts of self-governance and centralized governance expose the students to their role in leveraging self-governance within the U.S. Republican system of government. Very foundational. Excellent. And they're level two, macro understanding of centralized governance. Level two, federal, state, county, city levels of government. And then they really start getting you engaged, where you are equipped to actually engage the system, empowered with the knowledge of how the system works. The same knowledge that the adversaries, the people that are trying to derail our country, don't even know this. They don't even know their founding documents. They can't stand up to it. They hate it. Equip to challenge them. That's where we need to be. Level three is team building and performance for effective self-governance. Level four, inside gaming and planning for effective self-governance. And level five is outside gaming and planning for effective self-governance. And then there's your C level. That's your Constitution 100, 200, 300, 400 per state. And they have got these courses in every state across the country. If you go to Center for Self-Governance, their website, click on training, and there's a map. Locate training in your state. Click on your state, and you don't have to go to one in your state. Go to the one in Washington, go to the one in Idaho, but if you take the Constitution, it goes into your state's constitution. They're amazing. These state constitutions are amazing documents. They're so undervalued, underrated. Really good. So, that's just really something that's worth sharing with you. Now, speaking of that, Center for Self-Governance, I want to share from you a document that was written by somebody in self-governance. They've got a whole bunch of documents, little essays. This one is written and it's posted there. You can go read it. It's free. This one's written by Karen Leese from Center for Self-Governance. Will We Learn from History? America's First War on Terror. So, indulge me. Where did ISIS and other Islamic terrorist groups really originate? If we study unrevised world history, the truth of the saying, there is nothing new under the sun, becomes clear. The terrorism we read about in today's headlines has its roots in Genesis 16, 10 through 12. Quote, I will greatly multiply your descendants so that they will be too many to count. You will bear a son, and you shall call his name Ishmael. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him. As predicted, Ishmael's descendants are indeed numerous and have been in continuous conflict with ultimately every nation on earth at some point throughout history. Few know that America's first war after the Revolution, the war against the Barbary pirates, was with Islamic terrorists, the descendants of Ishmael. Involved in this conflict were five Islamic nations, Tunis, the Tunisians, Morocco, Algiers, Tripoli, and Turkey. These Islamic nations began aggressive and unwarranted attacks against predominantly Christian nations, including America, England, France, Spain, Portugal, Denmark, and Sweden. What? History does repeat itself, doesn't it? The pirates carry out their unprovoked terror in areas of the Mediterranean, and Atlantic coasts of Europe up to the British Isles, Norway, and Iceland. Today, we would essentially define this as state-sponsored terrorism. Just as Israel's recent accounts of self-defense have been redefined in some headlines as aggression, the Crusades have been blamed as the ignition point of Islam's numerous wars against infidels waged over the centuries since the Crusades ended. Original source documents confirm that the intent of the Crusades was to serve as a series of rescue and recovery operations for hundreds of thousands of Islamic, kidnapped, and enslaved Christians, and to restore the biblical Holy Land taken by Islamic forces. Historian David Barton writes about the period from the 16th to the 19th centuries. Quote, "They," Islamic pirates, "captured Christian nation ships wherever they found them, seized their cargo as loot, and killed or enslaved their seamen. They also often made raids on European coastal towns to either kidnap the wealthy for ransom payments or capture Christian slaves to sell at slave markets in places such as Algeria and Morocco." And we're not talking men slaves here either. "France, England, and Spain each lost thousands of ships in these attacks, and long stretches of coast in Spain and Italy were almost completely abandoned by their inhabitants until the 19th century. All traders belonging to nations that did not pay blackmail in order to secure immunity were liable to be taken at sea. The payment of blackmail, disguised as presents of ransoms, did not always secure safety with these faithless barbarians. For centuries, the Roman Catholic religious order of Mathurins operated from France with the special mission of collecting and dispersing funds for the relief and ransom of prisoners of Mediterranean pirates. In 1784, these barbaric Islamists, otherwise known as the Barbary Pirates, seized the first American ships. The first American ship in 1784. The fledgling nation soon found that the customary protection and ransom money paid to the terrorist quickly grew to consume 16% of the young nation's yearly budget by 1801. John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin were sent by Congress as diplomats to negotiate peace with the Islamists. When questioned about the motivation behind the unprovoked attacks on American interests, the Islamists candidly responded as they quoted commands from their Quran. Jefferson wrote, "It was their right and duty to make war upon the infidels wherever they could be found, and to make slaves of all that they could take as prisoners, and that every Muslim, or Muslim, who should be slain in battle was sure to go to paradise." America's diplomats wisely determined there was no way to negotiate with terrorists who justified violence as a foundational tenet of their barbaric political system, deceptively disguised as religion. The basis for unprovoked attacks remains the same in today's world as it did during America's founding era. Our founding fathers got it. They understood it. They didn't say, "Well, we can't really go after these guys. After all, we'd be going against the tenets of religious liberty." Remember, Islam is not a religion. It is a system, and they use religion to disguise the rest of their dominating system. Thomas Jefferson later bought a Quran to read the twisted doctrine for himself. He then backed efforts to publish an English translation of the book and urged that all Americans should read it for themselves. Jefferson wrote in the introduction, "Thou wilt wonder that such absurdities have infected the best part of the world, and wilt avouch that the knowledge of what is contained in this book will render that Islamic Sharia law contemptible." Well known as a pacifist, at least in his philosophy, President Jefferson wrote, "I was very unwilling that we should acquiesce in the humiliation of paying a tribute to those lawless pirates. I very early thought it would be best to effect a peace through the medium of war, even as a pacifist, Jefferson clearly understood the importance of peace through strength when dealing with the Islamic pirates. When Jefferson withheld further extortion payments, Tripoli declared war against the United States by intensifying attacks on American ships, capturing the crews, and seizing cargo as loot. The other offending nations threatened to join Tripoli in the war. But when Jefferson sent America's fledgling Navy and Marines to Tripoli, and the terrorist nations were confronted with America's new military might, Tripoli's allies withdrew. After 4 years of fighting, Tripoli finally signed a treaty on America's terms, ending the war in 1805. The line in the famous Marine Corps hymn, "From the Halls of Montezuma to the Shores of Tripoli," was inspired by America's first war with Islamic terrorists, the Barbary Pirates, descended from Ishmael. Afterward, Pope Pius VII declared that the 29-year-old nation of America had done more for Christendom against the pirates of Northern Africa than all of the combined powers of Europe. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation writes, "Expressions of submission were obtained from these powers, the Islamic nations, by the United States, such as had not been obtained by any other nation. America set an example for Europe of chastising and humbling a lawless band of pirates and ended the practice of paying tribute to Muslim terrorists." And that's the Language of Liberty series, a collaborative effort for the Center for Self-Governance. Great. Great information, great reading. And I want to share something else with you from history when we wrap up, when we come back in segment four. This is Radio Free Redoubt.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. Well, now that the election results are official, I want to say thank you. I could not have achieved an overwhelming 15 percentage point victory without all of you. Together, we challenged the status quo and sent a strong message to those who compromise on principle that wavering is not a strategy, it's wholesale surrender. And surrender will not restore freedom, liberty, and prosperity to our state. The path to freedom means fighting tooth and nail for lower taxes and less government, and being uncompromising on the rights to life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same. It means defending the Constitution and building coalitions around issues of principle. Together, we will continue to push forward the freedom agenda and the values that made America and Washington great. Please visit us and like us on Facebook at Freedom Agenda Washington and watch for actions you can take to help us clear the path to freedom. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the community elect Matt Shea Republican.
As water continues to become more highly regulated, will you have the legal right to use the water on your own property? When the grocery store shelves are empty, will you have sufficient quantities of food being produced on your property to sustain your family year after year? Strategic Landscape Design offers design and consulting services that can make the answers to these life-sustaining questions a resounding yes. They offer water rights permitting assistance for resources such as creeks, ponds, irrigation, and hydroelectric power, plus permaculture design for perennial gardens and energy-efficient greenhouses to produce enough food to feed your family all year long. Strategic Landscape Design is a Patriot-owned business located in the heart of the American Redoubt. Go to www.strategiclandscapedesign.com to learn more. This is Radio Free Redoubt, the voice of the resistance against all that will set itself against Americanism, against our heritage and our values. Thank you for tuning in. This is segment four, and segment four is brought to you by Werks Holsters, WERKZ.com, for your custom Kydex holsters, magazine carriers, and more. Go to works.com. They're made right here in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee. And don't forget to use your coupon code RFR. Now, the last couple of weeks, I asked for a compilation of a list of grievances from many of you in the listening audience. Now, I have a volunteer AMRON operator, Radio Free Readout partisan, who has stepped forward to organize those and put those, categorize them. And of course, as you read down through the list of grievances, the grievances that we face today, following the footpaths of our founding fathers, you know, returning to that ancient path and appealing to the authorities who are acting unlawfully. This is a very proper way to address this. So we have to first articulate the grievances. We don't like what you're doing. Why? Just because it makes us feel bad, or because you're in violation of a higher authority? So we have to put them on notice first and then educate them on the law and the unlawfulness of their actions. So we appeal to them first and give them a chance to change. And if they do not, then we appeal to heaven, the highest authority. So we have those lists of grievances, and as you read through them, or as I have read through them, they spawn off other thoughts, ideas. More things come to mind that you realize how wrong our culture, and specifically our government, has become. But the government is a product of the people. So still, when there are injustices, we need to speak up, because to not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act. And that was from Dietrich Bonhoeffer, when he saw so many people being killed, hauled off, imprisoned, tortured, abused, mistreated. He was a pacifist at first. That, you know, this is not our place to intervene. This is something that's just we have to just deal with. But then he was silent. And he realized at one point, by not speaking, I am speaking my approval. By not speaking out against it, I'm approving of unlawfulness. By not taking action against it, I am just as guilty as those who are carrying out the acts. So, anyway, very interesting. But we have to speak. We have to speak out. There are injustices. So that was good. I was really encouraged by that. I was also really encouraged by the great job that they're doing over there at Readout News. And they're still looking for volunteer contributors. If you'd like to help, they're doing this on a volunteer basis. And what a professional job that they're doing. I mean, they're just doing it because their heart's in it. It's about the mission. But it would be very helpful if they could have correspondence from the Readout states, Wyoming, Eastern Oregon, Eastern Washington, Idaho, and Montana, if you want to contribute content that's specific to those Readout states. And then also anybody out there in the listening audience, wherever you are, if there is content that is, you know, fitting for Readout News, patriot, conservative, patriot issues that you'd like to, you have a skill and a talent, a gift, being able to write and research. If you want to share that with others, get it published, get a hold of readoutnews.com. They're definitely looking for some other contributors. Last week, I also shared with you this article by Dave Koppel. Hopefully, you guys have been able to go over there and check out some of the writings. He has done a lot of history back from the Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire, all the way through the old, you know, English law, common law, and the early American history, and so much. It's really interesting. But last week I pulled this article, The American Revolution Against British Gun Control. And I shared that with you, but there's some things in here that I did not. And so I just wanted to part with you tonight with something that I thought was very interesting. Because oftentimes we say, what would America be like if the revolution would have failed? What if the British would have won? What would it look like? Well, we don't really know. Well, actually, that's not quite true. They had plans. What to do with America and Americans after the war when we win? So let me just read to you this part from volume 37, number 4. This was from the summer of 2012, so 4 years ago. He wrote, although there is room for speculation as to what would have happened had the American colonies lost the war for independence, historical documents make some things very clear. When a British victory seemed likely in 1777, Colonial Undersecretary William Knox drafted a plan titled, What is Fit to be Done with America? Intended to prevent any further rebellions in America, the plan called on the establishment of the Church of England in all of the colonies, along with the hereditary aristocracy. This is an aristocracy of people that would be passed down through their generations. Horrible formula for the common person, for the citizen. Pure makings of tyranny. Established by the Church of England, no less. More makings of tyranny. But the most ominous measure it would have enacted would have been a permanent standing army, along with the following emphasis added. The militia laws should be repealed and none suffered to be reenacted, and the arms of all the people should be taken away. Nor should any foundry or manufactory of arms, gunpowder, or warlike stores be ever suffered in America. Nor should any gunpowder, lead, arms, or ordnance be imported into it without license. Many gun control policies in America today follow the British blueprint. The Federal Gun Control Act of 1968, for example, prohibits the import of any firearm which is not deemed suitable for sporting purposes by federal regulators. Certain cities openly declare their gun fees are intended not to prevent the wrong people from owning guns, but to discourage all private citizens from owning them. This is very interesting. In the early 1900s, there was a case. I'm going to have to pull the details up. A man was arrested for having a sawed-off shotgun. Unfortunately, he did not show up for court to defend himself. So the judge issued a ruling without him even being present. And he upheld the conviction because a sawed-off shotgun, he declared, the judge declared, a sawed-off shotgun can only be used for sporting purposes. It has no military use. Therefore, this law banning it will be upheld. 100 years ago, the courts looked on the legality of firearms, on their utility as military arms. They fully understood that the intent was for citizens to be armed was for the common defense. It had nothing to do with sporting, and they even declared it. You don't need a sawed-off shotgun because it has no sporting, it has no military value. Clearly, all that could be used for is sporting. So you have no constitutional right to own it. They knew very well back then your right to keep and bear arms specifically was to ensure your right to have military arms. And that's when gun control really began in America. When they decided a firearm could be banned for a specific reason. Of course, then it was the exact opposite of today. It can only be used for sporting purposes, has no military value, therefore it can be banned. How far are we fallen? So, my friends, my fellow patriots, stay the course and try to get another basic combat load of ammo. Try to make sure that you have a combat rifle for every member of your family. And just like the patriots back then, as soon as they started getting the word that the firearms were going to be confiscated, they began doing military drills in the town square. That was a pretty powerful message. All right, you guys have a blessed week. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being out there. Thanks for your support, your prayers, your letters of encouragement, your ideas and input. I love it all. And thank you guys also for helping us financially to continue to grow and expand Radio Free Readout and the reach and the message. The $5, $10 a month, $20 a month, it all adds up. And it's what makes all this possible. So I'm very grateful, and I don't say it nearly often enough. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Godspeed to all of you. This is the voice of the American Redoubt. I am John Jacob Schmidt. My name is your name, too. Good night.